Dick Hart said that specifically because of a heresy that was going on in his time, that they were trying to say, well, we don't exist. This is a material world, and the material world doesn't exist. Or is it more... Because I was thinking it was after Augustine, when Augustine said, I'm deceived, therefore I exist. Because his line was very close to Descartes.
Yeah, the main difference with... main difference between Descartes and Augustine there, and you could also argue for Anselm and Augustine on Anselm's ontological argument. Augustine is really not trying to argue for God at those points. Sometimes, what looks like an ontological argument from Augustine is actually a prayer. That you are the being that, you know, basically you are the being that cannot not exist. You know, but so I don't think Augustine is arguing this is my argument here so much as he's just acknowledging, as a Christian, I acknowledge. You know, because you've enlightened my mind, I can see there's no possibility of your non-existence. Well, Anselm tried to use that as an argument for God. And by the way, I do think that that does work. I think the ontological argument, you can prove God's existence with logical necessity. The problem is...
Not logical necessity alone.
Well, yeah, I think with logical necessity alone, but the problem is you get too thin of a God. You don't know, there's nothing, you get a God that you don't know anything about. That's why some of the guys used the ontological argument were Christian theists. Some were deists. Some were, I'm not too sure if theists used it, but some were, like Spinoza, basically pantheistic in their thought. Some were panentheist, like Hartshorne and Whitehead. So basically, you don't get enough information about God. But I think it's just the fact that we know, okay, like for instance, the statement. Okay, the logical law of excluded middle, when you have two alternatives where they both cover the gamut, okay, like to say that Phil Fernandez is either man or non-man, there's an example, because there's no other option, okay? There's no third possibility there, because man and non-man cover it all. You could say the same, Phil Fernandez is either ape or non-ape. Well, there's not, one of those two has to be true, because it covers the gamut. And I'm non-ape, and I'm man. Okay, but, and so the statement, absolute truth exists, and absolute truth does not exist, you know, pretty much covers the gamut. It's an either-or situation. And well, one of those two statements is self-refuting. Therefore, the other one must be true. Because the statement, absolute truth, does not exist. If that is true, it would be an absolute truth. Therefore, it has to be false. And so the statement, absolute truth exists, must be true. Now, having said that, if you call absolute truth, you capitalize it and say that's God, because even Jesus calls all the truth, great, you've got an argument for God's existence that works with logical necessity. Problem is, what does it mean to be absolute truth? Now you've got to use arguments that don't carry the weight of logical necessity to see. Norman Geisler says the reason why the ontological, but he's, Geisler starts with empiricism. He starts with the world of the senses because he's Thomistic, and Aquinas was Aristotelian, followed Aristotle. So everything in the mind was first in the senses except the mind itself. So he doesn't like the ontological argument. He says the problem with the ontological argument is the only valid form of it is like from the Notre Dame philosopher Alvin Plantinga. And Plantinga argues that God, he goes to all different possible worlds, that the greatest possible being, the greatest conceivable being, would have to exist as the greatest being in every possible world. Okay, if there was one possible world that he didn't exist in, then there's a greater possible being that does exist in all possible worlds. Okay? Well, the actual world isn't an impossible world, otherwise it wouldn't have been actualized. It's a possible world. Therefore, the greatest possible being exists in this possible world, the one that's been actualized. Geisler admits that is a valid argument, but he says, but the thing that Plantinga assumes is that the actual world exists. And so it leaves the realm of a purely ontological argument, purely from reason and from the mind, and goes into the world of the senses. Well, not necessarily so, because Geisler says, because it's always possible that nothing exists. And it's always logically possible that nothing exists. So now Geisler would say it's actually undeniable that something exists, but actual undeniability is different from logical necessity. Okay? So, but the problem is, though, Geisler says that it's always possible that nothing exists. Now Geisler would argue against that, but he would use cosmological argumentation. Okay? Now the problem is, though, I question Geisler's statement that it's possible that nothing exists. Just think about it. Nothing exists. Yeah. There's a way of writing. Nothing was often called by ancient philosophers, nothing was often called non-being. To say that something exists, ancient philosophers, even Aquinas, to say that something exists, Aquinas would say, well, that means that something has being. Or is being.
Wow, different.
So to say nothing exists, you could translate that sentence as saying non-being is being, which is the classical formulation of the law of non-contradiction put in the metaphysical realm of the realm of reality. In other words, non-being is being is a contradiction.
Right.
So nothing exists is saying the same, that is a contradiction.
Nothing is
therefore there. Something has to exist. So basically what I'm getting at is I think the ontological argument, Geisler is saying it never leaves the realm of possibility, never really leaves the realm of the mind. I think it does, because I think the statement nothing exists is not only Geisler would say it's actually undeniable that something exists, because someone has to exist to deny. And so, you know, another, for a person to deny, if you deny your existence, you first have to exist in order to deny it. So Geisler argues that it's actually undeniable that God exists. But he would not say that it's a contradiction. That to say that God doesn't exist. So what I'm saying is there is an open door for the ontological argument, but the problem with it is it doesn't prove enough.
Sure, it's you could use an argument, but it's not the ultimate argument.
Yeah, and it doesn't prove a personal God.
It's still, all that sounds like you might as well just be like the Hindus and say everything's mine.
Yeah,
it's all an illusion.
Yeah, well, and it's and all Geisler's saying, though, is Geisler's not saying that he believes it's you know, Geisler believes all this stuff exists. See, that's what an empiricist, okay, an empiricist argues from the five senses. to, if he believes in God, to God. Okay? A rationalist can do that, but doesn't have to. A rationalist can stay in the realm of ideas and argue for God. Geisler's saying, no, that doesn't work. You've got to get into the realm of the senses before you can argue for God. I disagree. I think that what Geisler is saying, that there's a logical possibility, something that Geisler doesn't believe, but if you say it's a logical possibility that nothing exists, I'm saying the statement nothing exists itself is not logically possible. It's a contradiction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, but whatever the case, you're still left with an ontological argument that proves a naked God, proves a God that doesn't have enough clothes, doesn't have all the
sure.
Christian theistic clothes on. But what I'm getting at about presuppositions is that when we reason either for God's existence or against God's existence, we are already assuming something.
Mm-hmm. Is there or not?
Well, no. We're assuming that human reason can find truth.
Okay.
And so in Van Til's argument, transcendental argument, we're already presupposing the existence of God. Even an atheist presupposes the existence of God, even in an attempt to deny his existence. I would agree with him, except that he says it's the triune God who has revealed himself in the scriptures. No, it doesn't come with all that. But basically, just to use human reason and to act as if human reason helps us to find truth implies that we exist in a rational context. And that implies some type of rational ground or cause of this universe. And so basically what I'm saying is, we'll get to it when we deal with truth and knowledge next week. But I'm basically saying, just to argue any position, whether it's atheism, Buddhism, Christianity, just to rationally argue any position presupposes a rational cause for the universe.
Well, aren't you arguing based off established facts, or are you presupposing the facts as well?
Well, what I'm saying is, just to begin the argumentation process presupposes a foundation. Now, Van Til and Clark would say it's a foundation of Christian theism. I would say, no, it's a foundation of theism. In other words, just the fact that we argue, assuming that we can arrive at any truth, only makes sense within a theistic universe. Because it's like C.S. Lewis argued that if our reason, if human reason, came from a non-rational cause, like primordial soup, okay, you can't get reason from non-reason.
Sure, yeah, you get a mess.
Yeah. So basically, for reason with a small r, the existence of reason with a small r, there has to be reason with a big r. Now, Van Til sees that type of thing as closing the door on traditional apologetics. I see that as opening the door for traditional apologetics. I see that because we live in a theistic universe, it enables us to argue. In Van Til's thought, you can argue from God to morality, but you can't argue from morality to God. I argue that you can argue in either direction. You could say that if God, then morality. But you could also argue morality, therefore God.
Where'd morality come from?
Yeah,
Since God,
But when it comes to, you know, you might get an atheist who denies that he really believes in absolute morals. And you might get an atheist who denies that he believes in absolute truth. But when he's rationally arguing for any position, even if it's his atheism, he's living as if he believes reason works. And so he's really presupposing that this universe is a rational universe, which seems to imply a rational cause for it. Because again, whenever you get what you think is reason coming from a non-rational, and you get someone who thinks he's got a good rational argument, if you show that his premises are irrational, you've destroyed his conclusion. His whole argument just goes out the window. But the atheist is arguing that from irrational or non-rational causes came human reason, so that human reason really does work so that we can disprove the existence of God. And it's like, no, that doesn't follow. If your reason came from the non-rational, it's non-rational itself.
The non-secondary.
Yeah. So, so whatever the case, I think that just the fact that we think and make moral value judgments does presuppose the existence of the theistic God, but that opens the doors. Because non-believers remain in God's image just like we were. So that opens the door for us to defend the Christian faith. It doesn't shut the door on it. But is it at the chapter 9 or 9?
Yeah, they went by fast.
Yeah,
it was great.
Woo.